How to have fun anytime, anywhere. Step one, go to ChumbaCasino.com.
ChumbaCasino.com. Got it.
Step two, collect your welcome bonus.
Come to Papa, welcome bonus.
Step three, play hundreds of casino-style games for free.
That's a lot of games, all for free.
Step four, unleash your excitement.
Woo-hoo! Chumba Casino has been delivering thrills for over a decade. So claim your free welcome bonus now and live the Chumba life. Visit ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
This is Lou Elizondo, and you are listening to That UFO Podcast.
Very quickly, I want to ask, how often when you were looking at material as part of the task force, would you see material from orbit or above, like space?
Not too often, no. Most of the stuff was ground observation or air observation. That's pretty much where it was.
Is there a reason for that? Because I think when you think of the UFO topic, a lot of folks would think you're going to have these super sophisticated satellites and things in orbit and you'd be getting all that material. Or is it just the case that you tend to be getting things from a military point of view? It's ground-based observation, like you say, fighter pilots, jets, that's...
That's 100% it. Okay. That's what we were, you know... Because here's how I would liken it. Those things are mostly, it's an individual. Mm-hmm. Usually if it's something that's a satellite, that's an organization.
Yeah, good. Yeah, good call. Yeah.
So they're not going to be like, oh, by the way, we don't know what this is. It's going to be within that organization or whatever.
It's like NASA hasn't come into Logan to say, can you have a look at this for us? Yeah. It's like,
yeah.
Right. You know, that makes sense.
So that's why I think the majority of the stuff was, you know, it's either a ground observation or an air observation. And the best observation is, even if you're a fighter pilot doing this one thing, if there's other fighter pilots or commercial aircraft out there at the same time that see the same thing, better.
Yeah. Regarding all this data, one of the big arguments that's been had so often is the fact that the US government or organizations within it would plead transparency. I think people laugh about any government going on about transparency, but organizations like ARRO saying they're going to be transparent and information can come out to the public, yet we don't get a whole lot being released. Now, we're told that's for national security reasons. We are told it's because it can give away sources, methods, sensitive sensor systems, advanced sensor systems. We don't want the enemy knowing we have, even though it's the old, we know they know, we know they know. But we can't, you know, we can't let on. So it's all a big game. However, I've heard examples of, you know, I get why if the US is spying on a Russian nuclear, you know, fleet, and they have some incredible camera that can look at it from miles and hundreds of miles away in like really crystal clear, sharp imagery, that, and they are probably in an area they shouldn't even be or don't want the Russians to know they are. And this is just a made-up example. And during that filming, they managed to film some UAP buzzing the Russian craft. Yeah. I get they're not going to release that because the Russians will know we're filming them. The camera was actually hundreds of miles away, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. But it seems to be, then you take, for example, Dave Fravor and the Tic Tac incident. There must have been multiple cameras on that craft that filmed the object when it was really close to him. Now, that happened out at sea during a US naval exercise. So you're not, there's nothing sensitive necessarily there. Surely there would be footage that could be released that would show that much clearer than it is.
Yeah, they could scrub some things, but again, you don't know if it's like, remember, Commander Fravor and them at the time, when they went out there, they could have been doing their exercise, testing like the latest, greatest, blah, 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 whatever mm-hmm. we have. And then all of a sudden they get this real world task and they go do this thing and then use whatever. Now, I'm not saying that's what happened, but those are the type of things that could have happened. And they were like, okay, we gotta take this stuff off here. We gotta, you know, and people are human. Sometimes, you know, if they gotta do all this work to do this one thing, they're gonna come up with multiple reasons as to why not. they can't do it. So sources and methods is one I would agree with. There's some things on there that people shouldn't see, you know. But at the end of the day,
they just don't want this out.
I think that, yeah, at the end of the day, there's just some things that we don't want out. Yeah.
And in general, that's the UFO topic for gatekeepers, shall we say, whoever it may be, keeping this secret. It's easier to just keep not putting the material out there for the public. And we're going to get on to talk about your app soon and other civilian organizations, and I would encourage anyone to get involved in local groups, national groups, petitioning, you know, congressmen and women, senators, MPs, whatever it may be. But ultimately, all that pressure, is there any amount of pressure that's going to get the men or women behind the scenes who literally can release the 4K video to go, oh, do you know what? That's 2 million people have now signed a petition. Let's give them the video. Is that going to happen realistically?
I don't think so, me personally.
I would agree.
I think we've dug ourselves into a position where it's just easier just to keep denying, and just leave it alone. And so that's why I tell everybody, in order to do anything, we've got to figure it out ourselves. Before I left the task force, actually, not even me, before Jay Stratton left the task force, he said, give Arrow as much support as you can. All right. I thought Jay was going to be the new commander of Arrow, and that didn't happen or whatever. Because the Arrow came with a budget, whereas the UAP task force didn't have a budget.
Mm.
And he said, give him as much support as you can. And as I kept trying to get to individuals in Arrow, it was kind of like they had a gate guard that just, he was like, no, we got this. We can do this by ourselves. You know, we don't need your help. And to me, the most telling thing about Arrow was, and someone please correct me if I'm wrong, but the most compelling thing to me is when Arrow got created, they didn't bring anybody from the UAP task force. Okay? It was a whole bunch of new people. So why wouldn't you want people that have already been working on this stuff and having to pass this stuff over to you? That can give you some of the historical background and, you know, some of the things like that. You know, they just don't need you. And then when there were things going on, I'd get a phone call. Hey, Mr. Logan, have you seen this? Okay, I'm on it. And then I would give them a call and say, hey, I need to talk to Kirkpatrick or I need to talk to such and such. And people were like, well, who are you? I said, well, my name is Logan and I'm trying to get a hold of this. Well, they're busy right now. Okay, well, X is going on. Could you let them know that they need to be aware of it and give me a call back? Never got a call back. So I was just like, okay. So I just called up Jay Stratton and said, look, tried it your way. It doesn't work. I'm done. I'm not calling them again. And he said, okay, I understand. And we just left it at that.
So that decision then to come forward publicly Was that one that you made consciously, or was it an organic process? Was it James Fox getting in touch with you and saying, hey, do you want to be in this new feature? What happened there?
Okay. So remember that SCU conference I was telling you about?
Yeah.
So James Stratton was there. Now, people were asking me to come forward and say something and whatever, since I'm no longer with the task force. And I was like, nah, I like to be in the background and just do all the stuff that I need to do because nobody's there. So Jay Stratton was at SCU and he was going to do a talk. And when he showed up, all these people were like, you know, he was like a rock star, you know?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, he goes, well, you know, that's pretty interesting, but why are you asking me? And he points directly at me and goes, Logan worked for me. He was there. And everybody was like, and started chasing after me. And I was like, and I looked back at Jay and he just kind of gave me this really shitty grin as he dodged out the door. And I was like, okay, I'm out now. And then Leslie Keen and James Fox came to me and said, tell us what you think. Tell us all these things. So I was like, I said, from an unclassified perspective, I will tell you what I can. But the bottom line is that you need to know is disclosure has already happened. We already know, okay? Especially the people that have seen it. They already know. They're just, all it is like one of those outliers. They're just waiting for the government to do that little tick and go, yes. And that's happened. So now they go, well, now that the government's admitted it, we need something a little bit more. Yeah, the president has to say it. Well, you already know. All right.
That's not disclosure, is it? That's permission almost.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
You know, so disclosure's already happened. So now it's about collecting more evidence so that you can put in front of academia so that people can understand the boundaries of what we're dealing with. Because I would say UAPs are UAPs. I would say paranormal is paranormal and cryptids, you know, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, Nessie, that's something else. But there are certain times when we're seeing overlay of all of those things, you know? So are they all connected together? We don't know because there's been so much stigma. So the idea is let's work together with my app and other people's apps and let's get a common data format going and let's collect as much data as we can, find out where these things have been seen, put some overlays on it to figure out where the hotspots are, concentrate our efforts on collecting that data and get the data back to academia. And then from academia, we get the data out to guys like you with your podcast so you can share the rest of the information with the rest of the world. That's my thing, because I don't think you need the government to do this anymore, because we've got telescopes, we've got apps, we've got sensors that we put on our houses, all kinds of things. And these things are being seen every day. I mean, think of the Phoenix lights when all those people saw it, all right?
Yeah.
If somebody hadn't collected all that camera images and video footage, all that stuff would be in front of academia right now and people would be analyzing the crap out of it, all right? And there's other incidents where it happens multiple times where there's quite a few people there. And all you have to do is just collect the data. All we're asking is be a participant, be a citizen scientist, and help us collect the data. If you want to be more involved and, you know, help us analyze the data, if you want to be more involved and donate, whatever the case may be, just participate. Because a lot of people, they've got anxiety over this type of stuff. But either... At the end of the day, my biggest thing when I was active duty, well, I wasn't active duty, I was still working as a contractor. My biggest thing was just trying to figure out, is this friend or foe? You know, we did China. Nah, I don't think it was them. We did Russia. Nah, I don't think it's them. And then, like I said, the third rail, and nobody wants to go there, but you have to think about it. Mm-hmm. All right. And
yeah.
You know, Or is it possibility that at the end of the day, you're looking at an Independence Day scenario where we're all ganging up to go, you know, do this thing. So, and nobody wants that, you know, we'd rather hope that they're friendly and they're bringing technologies and capability. Maybe they can end cancer. I don't know. You know, maybe it becomes possible to say, you know, hey, can we take a ride once around Pluto and come back? You know, it becomes some entrepreneur's dream to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. But at the end of the day, friend or foe, we don't need anybody to tell us that it exists and that it's real and that because disclosure has already happened. It's all about trying to figure out what's the rest of the story. And without people like you who are asking questions and helping us put together, because trust me, there's going to be some other guy that's working interested just like I am, who's going to be listening to your show and going, hey, I heard Logan say this. I didn't know that part. And now we're putting it together. And then later on, we go to the Soul Foundation or any of these other conferences. And now we're collaboratively talking, just kind of like we did with the task force, but electronically. Now we're out in these big meetings and we're talking to people and sharing data. Because I learned a wealth of things from James Fox and from Leslie Keen. Like, I know I'm kind of running on, but I want to get
across. No, go for it.
Across. So 1990, January 1990, I had just cross-trained from being a B-52 crew chief over to an Intel analyst. I put in, believe it or not, for a job at Alconbury Air Force Base, and they sent me to Bitburg, Germany. All right. So
close enough.
Thank you. Yeah, I tried. All right.
Yeah.
So I'm going, I'm on this, we used to have this military exercise in Europe called Reforger, Return of Forces Back to Germany. Okay. And it was just, you know, in case we had to go to war, we'd know what kind of things that we're supposed to do, where we're supposed to work, those type of things. Well, I'm on one of the last flights because now the wall has come down in Germany and, you know, we're making new friends and stuff like that. And I'm on this flight and I'm eating a Philadelphia cheesesteak because I'd taken off from Philadelphia. And somewhere between Iceland and Scotland, the sun is just coming up and I just happen to look out the window and there's this diamond head triangular thing doing this. And it would go in the clouds sometimes and pop out of the clouds, not on the vector that it went in. So I was like, what the hell is that? So I looked to the guy next to me. I said, do you see that? And he goes, yeah. And there was a third guy and he's eating a hoagie and he's like, yeah, what is that? And then I'm like, oh, I'm going to my first Intel assignment. I'm going to get read in on some cool stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And I get to my unit and they're all looking at me like I'm an idiot. So I was like, all right, again, one of these things that goes in the back of your head just for later. So I go to Desert Storm, that's over. And it just happens that British AWACS lands at the base I was at in Germany. And I still have my accent and they're looking at me going, what are you doing with the Americans? And I was like, long story, da da da. They're like, why don't you come fly with us? So I go flying with them, having a blast. And then it just dawns on me, wouldn't this be the perfect people to ask what's flying around?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, hey, what's out there that does the weird stuff? And he's like, you know. And I'm like, no, I don't know. Come on, Logan, you know. I was like, look, I don't know. And they've got this, I'm checking in, I'm helping them check in aircraft and check out as they come in and out of the airspace. And so they've got this display, and this guy pulls out some kind of tape or something, plugs it in, and it's now a different date, and you can see the aircraft flying around. And you saw this one aircraft just kind of ding, ding, and it was gone. And I was like, yeah, who's that? And he goes, you know, Logan. I was like, no, let's not go through that again. And he says, that's your SR-71. So, you know, it was prior to 1989, I guess, and they had kept a recording of it so they would remember. And I said, no, that's not what I saw. And they were like, what did you see? So I explain it to them in more detail. And he looks at the other technician there, and they pull out a tape. And sure enough, every sweep of the radar, just about, they have a target that is jumping all over the screen. And I go, I was so excited. I was like, who's that MF right there? You know, I was like, yeah, that guy. Who's that? Yeah. And they're like, what? They're like, you know. I was like, dude, let's not go through that again. And he goes, okay. He goes, we thought you really knew. He said, we don't know who this guy is either. We've just always assumed it's you Americans playing with us. I was like, what? He goes, yeah, we have tried contacting this guy on the radio. He never answers. He says, we've tried sending other aircraft towards it. And whenever we get close to him, he jumps away. So we've never figured out who he is. And I'm like, what? And he goes, no, we don't know who this guy is. So we've just always assumed it's you Yanks playing games on us. I said, trust me, it's not us. And then it dawned on me. I was like, hold on a second. You know about this. So am I to assume that your whole squadron knows about this? And he goes, hell yeah, but nobody's talking about it because nobody knows what the hell's going on and we don't get any answers back. So who are we going to talk to? And I was like, so your whole squadron knows about this particular thing bebopping around? And he goes, yeah. I was like, wow. So then I'm like, could it be that if British AWACS knows about it, American AWACS should know about it, French AWACS should know about it, NATO AWACS, every AWAC out there possibly knows that this thing exists. I don't know because I don't know all their capabilities, but mm-hmm. It was just one of those things that I brought up, and I was like, thank you so much, because now you've confirmed for me that there was something actually there. Now, the twist on the story is this. I think it was late August. James Fox says, have you seen? He said, I'm going to send you the whole video here in a second, because I was so busy I didn't see the whole video. And he goes, but Logan, I got a question to ask you. And I go, what? He goes, you told me that you saw something in England in January of 1990. I said, yeah. And he goes, I'm going to send you a picture. He sends me a picture of the Calvine video.
Yeah.
And that was the exact same thing that I saw zipping around in the sky. So I was like, what the hell is this? And he goes, dude, I got to send you my video, the whole video, so you can see. So that's how I kind of got smart. But I was like, no, I started looking on the internet, and I was like, that, wow, that I saw that, you know. And it was the way the sky was, it would look dark or it would look kind of whitish, but it was, mm-hmm. or I should say blackish or whitish or grayish in that comedy, but it was just zigzagging through the clouds. And I was like, so you mean this thing's, it was like more confirmation that this thing is real. Now, what I didn't realize at the time was that in January 1990, being over Europe, that was the end, coming towards the end of the Belgian wave.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't see an actual triangle like everybody else was seeing. I saw this diamond looking thing that was or zigzagging around. And that's even made me even more curious to want to find out about what is going on. You know, I don't know of all the things out there, but now that I've seen enough out there and I kind of know what to expect and I know who to go talk to. I mean, on this trip, I have met and talked, sat down with Jacques Vallée, Eric Davis, Hal Puthoff, and whatever. And I can consider them my friends. I consider them my mentors. You know, Dan Posalka, Leslie Keen, all these guys that I can just sit there and go, well, what about this? What about this? You know, and again, it's me learning, just like how you are. You know, I'm telling you stuff and you're picking up stuff too. So again, the thing that I'm trying to say is we don't need the government. We just need to get our collective shit together and go figure out what this is by ourselves, you know, and then keep the conversation going as we were finding out new things. But yeah, that was one of the things, finding out about that Calvine thing just kind of blew my mind. I was like, that is the exact same thing I saw over here, over Scotland, or between Scotland and Iceland.
I'm glad you shared the story, because so many people got in touch with me to ask about your being, it was the way you were tagged in certain interviews and online when people clip things, that you were a witness to the Calvine UFO. So some people took that to mean, wait a minute, Logan was standing there on the hills in August 1990 when this thing was there, or was he the pilot flying the secretive jet behind the object?
Yeah,
yeah. So I'm glad that's cleared up. And it's, you're likely a witness to a craft that was very similar, if not the same one, but 8 months previous to the sighting, which makes a lot of sense. And loads of people sent me that as a listener question for you. So,
okay.
I'm very glad you could clear that up. And it is interesting you saw it in a similar area. What's your gut feeling on what that object would have been? You're saying not human tech.
Well, originally when I got to my base, I was expecting someone to say it was human tech and it was, you know, something that I would get read into later and blah, blah, blah. And when none of that happened, I started thinking, and then I started later hearing about the Belgian wave. I started, and I still believe to this day that it's not our tech. You know, I have no proof because I didn't, you know, I mean, it was off in the distance and I was watching it and I couldn't even really tell you the size because, I mean, all I could see was the clouds and as it did its thing. But my best guess, mine, was that it's not ours. Maybe shared, but it, not the way that thing was moving. There was, I mean, I even sat there thinking, when you do that kind of a turn and you're doing this thing, I'm like, oh, there was a TV show a long time ago. It didn't make it very long. I think it was called Auto Man. And it was like a guy that was part virtual reality, part something. And he would turn the car so fast that the occupant in there would constantly be like splat up across the window, you know?
Yeah.
And I was like, well, considering the way this guy's driving, oh my God, you know, you're like, there's no way. There's no way that there was just a human sitting there just kind of doing all this jig-jagging thing. And who flies like that anyway?
Yeah, it's,
you know, we're trying to get from point A to point B. We ain't just trying to sit there in the sky and just go, okay, let me see what I can do now. You know, stuff
yeah.
like that.
Yeah. I want to ask you, and we're going to get to the app in just a moment. Whistleblower, do you feel that's the right label for you?
No, I'm not a whistleblower. I'm not trying to give out any classified information. Yeah. I'm just trying to let... For me, the biggest thing when James first came to me, it was... Tell us what it's like to work in the task force. And so even when you hear me talk in the video, this is very specific. I sit there and I say, I'm here to tell you what I can from an unclassified perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And I say, I supported the task force. And Jay Stratton even called me up and said, what the hell are you talking about? And I thought he was mad because I was on the show, and he wasn't mad about that. He goes, you didn't support the task force. You were in the task force. Remember, we invited you in through the door. He said, I may not have known Sarah Gamm, but I knew you and I talked to you almost every day. And I was like, all right. Next time I'll tell everybody I was in the task force. But the way I felt was like, I was interacting with them, if not every day, at least several times a week.
Mm-hmm.
And so whistleblower, no. I'm trying to do is let everybody know that we were doing our darndest to protect those pilots, figure out what was going on so we could put a report together to show, hey, there's something that we need to be paying attention to, because those pilots were getting worried that when they have that accident, they're going to be made to look like idiots where, oh, it's pilot incompetence, when there was actually something else out there. So that's what we were trying to do. And like I said, I think I've told this to everybody. Although he wasn't my official boss, I say Jay Stratton was the best non-boss I ever had, because he was constantly telling me and the other guys to lean forward. And he said, and if you have any problems, come back to me, because I've got the rank to go ask the right questions, you know, and figure out what's going on. And then he said, and then he would get us together and then we'd talk. And I can't say the same for Arrow, because like I said, the moment that they didn't invite us into the group or tried to bring members of the task force into Arrow, my spidey sense started going off and saying, something's not quite right with this group, but if you're asking me to help him, Jay, sure, I'll help him. And then when they started blowing me off, I was like, okay, they don't have the same mission as what we had when we were with the task force. Because the task force was about the pilots. This, to me, Arrow is about something else.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. And on Jay Stratton, for a start, tell him I'd like to speak to him. I think a lot of folks would, but more people I speak to and the more people I hear, they say Jay Stratton's the guy. Jay Stratton, across so many aspects of the UFO topic and organizations that happen in the background and in the foreground. You mentioned Unhidden. Jay Stratton's just signed on, I think, as a director.
I know he's on Unhidden, and I know he's doing some other things.
Yeah, that was just recent. Like, he seems to be someone with such an influence across this topic in a positive way, that I suppose we'll find out more when his book comes out in the next year or so, whenever that may be. I'm sure you'll get yourself an advanced copy, Logan, as well.
I hope.
Yeah, you'll be looking forward to that. But I wonder, to play devil's advocate, you mentioned in interviews you like to play devil's advocate, or had to play devil's advocate, speaking to those personnel to try and get both sides of the story. So what would you say to folks who are wary of former military personnel? Let's get rid of the term whistleblower, because you're right, it doesn't always apply. Sarah Gamm, Lenval Logan, David Grush, Jason Sands, any number of whistleblowers, former military personnel coming forward, and a lot of folks are suspicious about the why, the who, the agendas behind it. Is this misinformation? Is it disinformation? Are these people being lied to and allowed to come out into the public? Why now? What would you say to that?
It's actually a good question. For me, all right, I know about David Grush and I know his story and stuff, but for me, it's about trying to figure out what's really out there. Think about this. From an intel perspective, you're, as an intel analyst, right? You're there to figure out things. You're there to analyze and figure out what the truth is. So here's this one subject that nobody seems to, back when, nobody seemed to want to touch. But now you're in a unit where you're supposed to reach out and touch it and find out the truth, all right? Like, remember what I said? When we had this collaborative group, all right, it was the fastest growing group on the classified channels, all right? Because everybody wanted to know, you know? What's the truth behind it? Is it ours? Is it this? Is it this? So all we're trying to do is, I'm not trying to say it's US, I'm not trying to say it's this or anything. We just want to pull back the onion layer and figure out what is really going on. Because it makes you wonder, again, it's when you ask questions in this particular field, you don't necessarily get answers, you get more questions. So my first question was, again, hey, if they're trying to hide, why are they turning on their lights at night? If this is a safety thing on the range for our pilots, why is nobody addressing it as a safety thing?
Hmm.
You know, if any other place you go to, people would be, oh my God, let's get all these things in there to figure it out. So I thought, when this is going to show how big my head is, I thought when I got into the task force, I was going to be the one to like blow this thing wide open and figure out, yeah, that's what's going on. And da 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 da. And the longer I was there, I was like, I remember Jay laughing at me, thinking I was kind of being bold. I said, I am frustrated. I thought we'd be beyond this by now, at least figure something out. And he goes, you're in the same boat the rest of us are. We're all trying to figure this out. So us coming forward, especially for me, is to let everybody know we did try to do the right thing while we were on the task force. We're still on it. We're still trying to work with others to figure out what's going on. Why? Because we don't see enough people doing it. All right. So if we can, and you try to find that one cause that you know you can contribute to. Well, I think it was Robin Williams, Dead Poets Society. All right. Mm-hmm. You got to find the one, if you're in an orchestra, you got to find that one thing that you can play that's better than everybody else that can fit into the chorus. Okay. So me doing this outside of the task force, this is my one thing that I feel I can contribute to. I think I can think outside the box long enough to build a device that people can use to go after and find the truth. I think I can talk to people like you, tell them the truth. You don't have to believe it, but the hope is that I will gather enough information for you to take a step back and go, oh my God. Someone said at the end of the day, what is it that I would really like? And I told him, I said, I would like to collect enough information that Neil deGrasse Tyson and Mick West wouldn't have a word to stand on. All they could do is go, okay, we got nothing. You know?
Yeah.
Because for everything you throw at them, they've got some answer, you know, whatever.
Sure.
You know? So that would be my goal. But at the end of the day, it's all we're trying to do is let you know that we're trying to do our best. We're trying to find out the truth just like you are. It's just that we've been blessed enough to have more insight than most. And we're trying to use that insight to support the general public in figuring out what is going on in the skies around us. Because I've seen some of these people that have gone into mental health and you know, start acting weird, and you're sitting there going, wow, look at the way this has affected that person. Mm. And it's because the not knowing and the frustration and whatever. And if I can help add a little bit to that, to where I can help my fellow brothers and sisters and fellow man, then this is the part that I feel I can contribute in. That's why. So it's not a matter of if people actually believe me. I'm not out there for everybody to believe me. I'm out there to find the truth that I can share with everybody else. And because there's people out there that no matter what answer you're going to give them, you're never going to please them. They're going to be,
yeah.
No, you're this. No, you're that. I've heard all the stuff about Lou. I mean, I've heard all the stuff about Jay, bad things that people are trying to say and whatever. And I'm like, you don't even know the guys, and where are you getting this from? And then when I dig, there's some guy out there pushing, you know, all this negative stuff. And I was like, and it finally dawned on me, they don't really know anything about anything. They're just trying to get viewers.
Yeah.
So that's the best I can tell you.
No, I think that's very well put. And the UFO topic, if you remember the meme that went around a few years ago about what color is this dress? And
yes.
Some, it was gold and blue or white and black or red and I'm colorblind. So for me anyway, I was like, I don't know. Like everything is an optical illusion to me if you ask me what color it is, okay? But I think just that in itself, people were so sure and you couldn't convince them otherwise. Either way, it doesn't matter. And the UFO topic and so many other topics are like that. And it's probably took me the almost 5 years of doing this podcast to get to this point. Logan, I'm going to steal 30 seconds just to mention this is for the first time. everyone likes to try and contribute something, and then we're going to talk about your contribution in just a moment. I've done the podcast now for almost 5 years, and something I worked on towards the end of last year is about to launch on the 15th of January through the platform Wondery Plus. It's a new podcast. It's a limited series, and I was just the host of it for the company that asked me to do it, and I was really honoured they asked. And it's me and a co-host, Elle Scott, and she is brand new to the UFO topic. She's a newbie. She works in podcasting but doesn't know anything about UFOs. And we've taken the Rendlesham Forest incident. Now, the series is called Encounters. People can go and search it. And the reason I was interested in doing it, and I get offered this kind of stuff, not all the time, I'm not being big-headed, but people offer me, will you come and speak at this? And I think, you don't want me. There are so many better people out there to speak to than me, or that could do presentations better than I can. And I can recommend all kinds of folks, but I think I'm not bad at this podcast thing. And what intrigued me was the idea I could sit for a series on one particular incident with someone who knows nothing about UFOs, not an expert, not a researcher, not a scientist, someone who's just like, UFOs, really? But keeping open-minded. And we go through the Rendlesham Forest incident. We've got Nick Pope, Ross Coulter, and Charles Holt all being interviewed as part of the series.
Charles Holt
ongoing.
Was not too far from me.
Yeah, and it was lovely chap. And we take their opinion, and I take her through the story as best I can. And you've got a newbie sitting there challenging me, but I'm challenging them to say, you know, think about this. Why would this happen? And it's a really interesting series. I've not heard the final product, but Encounters comes out on the 15th of January, folks. And I would like to think I can help contribute, bring some new ears to the topic by taking someone through who's a newbie themselves, and you get to hear two different perspectives. This podcast is for folks who are really interested in the UFO topic. Let's be fair. People are going to listen to this who have an interest or are starting to get an interest. That could be for skeptics or otherwise, or people going, let me hear the newbie debunk all this. And spoiler alert, they can't debunk all of this. And it's an interesting conversation, an interesting part. And that brings me, Lenval, apologies to your contribution that you're bringing forward now, not just your knowledge and conversation, but the app you've mentioned that you're developing with your expertise. So can you tell the listeners and viewers about the app?
I will, but I just want to add one thing about what you said. There's a guy that I know. He's in the intelligence community, but he's a pilot, and he's like, this stuff is stupid. This stuff is stupid. And I remember, for some reason, we had to talk about it, and I showed him the stuff, and his mouth dropped, and he goes, Logan, you don't understand. I've talked to other pilots about this, and they all agree with me. And I said, based on what you know now, I would really like you to go back and talk to your friends. And he came back and he goes, they finally admitted to me that they'd seen stuff. He said, but the stigma prevented them from saying anything. So he said, oh my God. He said, you know, what do I do now? And I said, learn. That's what the rest of us are doing. Just learn. So now to my app. My app is named Phenom. So if you see this, that's the app. What I was hoping to do was, between all this different sensors out there, my hope is that we could use this app as a way to collect data. Because a lot of people, when they collect data, if you ask them, they'll say, I saw a UFO. Well, where were you? Well, I was in London. Well, London's a pretty big place. What part of London? And they're like, well, you know, I was over here and whatever, and they can't give you that information. Well, what time did you see it? You know, well, the sun was kind of setting, you know, and you got all this ambiguity in there. So I said, what if we were to take all the sensors that are in your phone and use that? So, you know, you see something, we've now got your GPS location, we've got your time, we can take the angle of the phone, we can take all these different bits of information, we can take the sound, so we can see if we can catch your infrasound or ultrasound, all these things, and bring it back. And now your investigators or have enough information to share with analysts. So I was like, okay, we can do this. Let's take it one step further. What if we were to have teams where you, Andrew, had a couple of guys, you know, four or five people with you. You went out to a dinner. You all just left a restaurant. You're on your way home and you see something. Wouldn't it be nice if you could have a team that you would use the app, have it take an image and a video, whatever, and it would instantly go to those other five people that you just had dinner with 5 minutes ago and see if they can capture it too. Now you can capture that, whatever that anomaly is, from multiple perspectives, all right? Mm. Now you take it even further. There's other apps out there. Nanu is created in England by a guy named Nick Martin, all right?
Yeah.
And so if we have a common database, if we're really about trying to find the truth, it's not about hoarding the data. It's about being able to bring it and say, hey, someone used your app, England and Nottingham, and someone was using Nanu in Newcastle, and they all saw the same thing in the sky. Now we've got enough information to bring together to collectively say, okay, we saw this thing from multiple perspectives, so it ain't swamp gas, it ain't all these other things that people may say it is, and now we start trying to figure out what it really is. The other thing, too, is what's up with the lights? That's one of the biggest things I keep getting. What's up with the lights? Do the lights mean something? Is it a communications feature? Is it just an odd feature of the way their engines work? I don't know. But the idea is all these different things, collect the data and then start looking. If you can get enough data, what you really want to do is get the outliers. Concentrate on the outliers and bring that back to academia. Bring that back to what I call the graybeards, like Jacques Vallée and, you know, the older guys, Hal Puthoff, whatever. Nothing against them being older, but just they've been around a while and seen a few things so they can look at it. And then you have them do the study and take it to the rest of the community and share it with people like you so you guys can now get the word out. Hey, there's a new discovery. Here's what we can do. They just had a Japanese company use an AI over the Nazca lines in Peru, and they found like 300 more drawings with the AI looking at the Nazca lines. So why can't we do the same thing where we get all the data, we're looking at it, first phase, we do our due diligence, look over it, but now this thing is in a database and someone can take their AI to look at it and see all the things that we did not perceive initially with our own two eyes, but have the computer doing. So that's what I'm trying to do. So our app is called Phenom. It's on Apple. It's on Droid. Right now, I'm having a problem because, well, I started a GoFundMe, and if you want the GoFundMe page, I'll send it to you.
I'll put that up in the description. Yep.
Yeah. What I'm trying to do is I'm trying to raise some money to build a better back end for the database management. One of the things I've been seeing is people don't know how to use the app. I thought it was as straightforward as possible. You go into settings, you set up all the stuff that you need, you know, whether you want it to use cellular or not. But then there are some people out there, yes, that's it. There are other people out there, they're just taking the app and taking a picture of their guitar. And I'm like, do you not know what this is for? Or are you just doxing me to deliberately, you know, because there are some people out there that, for whatever reason, don't want anybody to know the truth. And I've heard that they've been attacking other people. So I get something up on there and it's not, I mean, I've had someone sit there and it was nothing against my African brothers and sisters, but it was an African guy and it was just his face. And he says, I'm here for the money. And I'm like, what does that mean? You know? So obviously something is getting out there. So I'm going to have to go into the back end and fix some things, but the tool does work because we have had people collect data and now we're looking to try and, you know, we're trying to get family members that when they see something, they all take out their phone, they all capture the data, and it doesn't matter if they're really close, but if they're further apart, it's better. But the idea is about the data. What's inside there that we can use, that we can share? And we're trying to have a thing one of the things I've discussed with some people is after academia gets the data, the next thing is to do maybe have provide the data to a bunch of podcasters all at the same time so that you guys now have something to share with your audience and your audience can participate and share from different perspectives. Now, the one thing I want to make sure everybody knows about my app, because I've heard different things, when you use the app, or at least other people's app, there's in the EULA, the user licensing agreement, they will say that anything you put on their app belongs to them in perpetuity. Okay.
Yep.
We don't do that because it's not about us. It's about the user having, he's the one that found it. He's the one that took the picture. So he gets to have all his 15 minutes of fame and everything. All I'm doing is in the EULA, it just says I get co-utilization rights. And the reason why that is important is because I want to be able to go to all the individuals and say, I need to use this. And I don't want to have to keep going, Mother, may I, Mother, may I, Mother, may I, Mother, may I. I want to be able to just grab the data and know that I've got full permissions to do so and take it to academia and let's get the ball moving. I don't want anybody hijacking me and saying, well, it's mine and I want $50,000 if you're going to get use my stuff into your stuff. No, not involved in that. You can do the 15 minutes of fame, get on the news and whatever. I will give all that to you. And you can say, I'm the first person to ever catch a really good video of a triangular video. That's wonderful. Not interested in that. All I'm interested in is the data. And at the end of the day, you know, getting to the truth and seeing how it affects people. So that's what Phenom is about. And if anybody has any questions, my email is phenomination7@gmail.com. All right. And trust me, I've got a lot of people that are calling and giving me good ideas to put into the app, but I use my own money to put the app together. So now I'm doing the GoFundMe to say, hey, I need a little bit of help to do the rest of the story and give people access to the data that they want. But that's pretty much it in a nutshell, Andrew.
I think that sounds palatable for a lot of people, and I'm not going to name other apps, and you didn't either, who perhaps have issues or people have issues with how they use data, like you mentioned, and folks will probably know the big one. But that collaborative approach, I think, is the best way forward. And that whole thing of it's my app and mine's has to be the best and just use this one and slating the competitors isn't the way forward. Like you mentioned, Nanu, I know, is a project that's been in the background for quite a few years. Nick spoke to me maybe 3 years ago about coming on the podcast, and I just know I know a lot of folks involved in it, and it's just still not quite there for launch yet. I'm not involved myself and I keep myself to myself. But like you say, with Phenom, have you got a timeline for like a, it's released now?
I've got a just kind of soft release, because really what I'm trying to do is get input from people on what I need to include and understanding, like I said, how people are using it. Because like I said, when someone just says, here's my guitar, I'm like, what does that do for anybody? You know, there's a couple where I've gone on there and it's been a helicopter flying by and I was doing an acoustics test on the helicopter because I want to get sound that you can hear and sound that is above and below human hearing so that we can collect all that. I want to know, there's all kinds of technologies coming out. Like, I've been approached by a law enforcement group, and they said, we're very curious about what you're using your app for. And I was like, why? What's the problem? They said, considering what's going on now, there's a good chance that first responders are going to be the first ones to show up to a UAP incident. Do you have anything in there that could help us? And I was like, what do you mean? And he goes, well, what if it's dangerous? And I said, oh, okay. So I just had someone come up to me and said, hey, Mr. Logan, I've got a capability that can go on your phone that it's like a poor man's radiation detector. I was like, whoa, let's talk, you know.
Yep.
Now I got to get the money to integrate that, you know. And then I just had a lady call me from New Jersey. And she goes, Mr. Logan, I got a question for you. She says, do you know what these things are flying over New Jersey? I said, no, I don't, ma'am. I said, as far as I know, they're regular drones, but there's so much talk that the noise is so high, you can't really figure out what's going on. And she said, well, she says, I don't think they're all drones. And I said, okay, what's up? She says, well, she said in one particular case, she saw one of these drones come down really low. And she said, it sounded like a helicopter. I was like, okay. She goes, well, she said, if you've ever been near a real helicopter, she said, you get from the rotors, you get that whop whop sound and you can feel it in your chest. She said, there was none of that. She said to her, it sounded like the sound was pre-recorded to give off that sound. And I was like, okay. So one of the things I'm trying to ask people, I said, those of you in New Jersey, start using my app to try and collect that. Maybe we can help solve this problem, if not, if it's really drones or if it's something else. And I'm open to just about working with anybody, collaborating, because I figure we've all got to cross this finish line together if we're going to make a difference as to knowing what these things are and what their intentions are. And again, for me, there's that deep thing in the back of my head, friend or foe. You know, are they here to help us, as some people say, or are they here to destroy us, as other people say? And it would be really nice to be able to put some of these naysayers and some of these skeptics to shut up. I have a saying, Phenom is for the skeptics, the believers, and the in-betweeners. Okay.
Yeah.
And so I've tried to say, because it will, the idea is it forces a conversation for us all to come together and go, yeah, what is that? That's not something normal. So that's pretty much where we're at. But I love to talk to people. If I can engage with people and find out more, especially more about how I can improve the app and how I can work with other people. I think when Nick and I talked, the big thing that we said we were going to do after we've gone through some development is make sure that we have a common database so that we can look at the data together and see what he's got, what I've got, and then go, hey, these two things match. You know, your chocolate looks good with my peanut butter. Let's put them together and go talk to the right people. And I think that's kind of where we've left off. But I'm hoping that we're both going to get there and be able to do something with the data that we have.
Nice. And we're going to run out of time soon, Logan, because you're a busy man and stuff to do. And you've been on with me nearly 2 hours. But you did mention those drones, and I'm glad you did. You say, and I think similar to myself, I'm guessing, and I'm going to ask you, you don't believe they're anything NHI necessarily and appear to be regular drones. Yep. I've shared my opinion plenty on here. That splits opinion, because some folks believe these are NHI, other folks think they're prosaic. Then you've got the in-betweeners. Why are you coming down on the side of likely just regular drones?
Well, I haven't seen anything that jumps out that says it's NHI. What I have seen, though, is I've seen some incongruencies in the way this stuff has been reported. Like, the first thing that came up was, I think it was the White House with John Kirby said, these are manned aircraft. All right. I was like, okay, then if they're manned aircraft and they're causing a disturbance to scaring the crap out of the general public, tell FAA to call them up and say, cut this crap out, you know, get them out of the way. That didn't happen. Then all of a sudden DHS came by and said, these are just, they're regular drones that are flying around. I was like, all right. Then they said a drone crashed at a mall. Well, they said it's a regular drone. So I'm thinking DJI Phantom, you know, Mavic, whatever. Some guy was on a train going past the place where the drone crashed. This drone was as big as a car. So I was like, so someone's misleading, doing something. Because when you hear the term, it was just a regular drone, you're thinking something small, prosaic, whatever.
Yeah.
Not something that size. Now, I tend to think that there's probably someone doing a test and people being lazy as they are, not all the proper communications is getting through so that we really know what's going on. So right now I have no indications that there is any NHI, but that's why I would like people to use my app so we can figure out if there is really something there. You know, I've had one police officer, law enforcement guy come up and said, what I saw did not look like it was a regular drone, but it could just be a differently designed drone. I don't know. So let's get some data and collect and see what it is for real.
Logan, what I'd love to do then is get you back on soon. And I've got loads of listener questions we won't get to today.
None.
Some of them I've managed to work into the body of the interview. Others I haven't gotten to. And we could also maybe go through some of the data from the app, some of the sightings, some of the pictures you've got, some of the more interesting stuff.
Yeah, I hope separate to. The week from instead the of all the BS that I've been getting.
Yeah, and do you know what? I was going to say at the time, you could get a lot worse than a picture of someone's guitar, let's be fair.
That's
so
true.
Hopefully you get something built in to help out with that. But Logan, once again, if you want to just give the name of the app and the email address for folks to get in touch with you.
Okay, so the name of the app is Phenom, just like how it says here. And usually if you see this emblem or logo, you'll know that you found the right one. And my email is phenomination7@gmail.com. And as I said, I'll send you the link to my GoFundMe.
Awesome.
A shout out to wives. My wife said, I don't mind you doing your hobby, just don't let us go broke doing your hobby. So that's why there's a GoFundMe.
Yeah, I can attest to that. Trust me, back in the day, you know, laptops and microphones and all that aren't cheap, but I'm sure the software and everything isn't either. So, Logan, brilliant talking with you. Thank you so much for all your time. And folks, go check out the Phenom app. Check out Encounters on Wondery Plus, selfishly as well, if you're listening to this past the 15th of January. And Logan, I'll get you back on very, very soon, mate.
All right, you take care.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show out on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify, just search That UFO Podcast Premium, YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer, a little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window.
Riley Herbst from 2311 Racing here, and you know what grinds my gears? Waiting for coffee. But instead of counting frappes and lattes, I fire up Chumba Casino. No apps, no fuss, just fun social casino games to pass the time. By the time my coffee's ready,
order for Riley.
I've already taken a few victory laps. Next time you're stuck waiting, make it entertaining. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.